So that brings us to agenda item 5, report and possible discussion from Texas Water Development Board staff. John Maurer is going to do that. Welcome, John.
Hello, everyone. Good to see all y'all. Just have a couple of updates from the Water Board side of things. And as always, just stop me if you have questions or want to have discussion on any of this. The really only material we've distributed recently, regional water planning related, is this water right data collection spreadsheet. So as a reminder, any water right used for supply or strategy in the regional water plans has to be aggregated and collected and submitted along with the initially prepared plans. So we sent out a spreadsheet to planning groups to do just that, and it's not required to use that one necessarily, but all the info in that spreadsheet will have to be submitted along with the initially prepared plan, which is due March 3rd. And funding news, so our 2025 cycle for SWIFT has kicked off, so abridged applications were due February 3rd. And we have received a record number of applications, so those are being currently scored, and then they'll be prioritized and invited to submit full applications. And then in other funding news, the other funding cycles are underway as always, so the project information forms for the drinking water and the clean water revolving funds are due March 7th, and then our annual agricultural water conservation grant is open, so those applications are due March 19th. And then another annual thing we do is a water use survey. So there's a big mail out earlier this year to entities to submit that. So that's due March 1st. And those are required, and I'm sure most of y'all are aware, but at least 3 years of surveys are required to be on file in order to be eligible for any of TWDB's funding programs. So that's why those are important. We have a financial assistance workshop coming up in Region G, and it will actually be here at the BRA headquarters. So thank you to the BRA for hosting that. And that will be on Thursday, May 15th at 1:30 p.m. So TWDB staff will be there to answer any questions or, you know, provide input on all of our vast amounts of funding programs that we offer. So hopefully that's helpful for entities in the region. And we've had some board member changes recently. So our former chairwoman, Brooke Pop, has been appointed to chair the TCEQ. So everyone wish her well in that regard. And then our Director Stepney has been appointed to be the new chair in her absence. So with her and Director Tanya Miller, we now have a two-person board until Governor Abbott appoints a third. And then as the group is considering adopting the IPP today, just wanted to post this little schematic on the timeline of where the group goes from here. So once the group adopts the IPP on the left branch, the main effort really is the public hearing. And so that requires, just a lot of effort. So the IPP documents have to be delivered to two different public locations in each county, one being the public library and another being the courthouse, as well as public notice has to be put in a newspaper of general circulation in each county. And then there's also a large mail out notice. So various entities like mayors and water right holders have to be notified by mail of the public hearing. And that will require a 30-day minimum notice. After that mail out and notice and putting of the IPP in the public locations, then the planning group can hold a public hearing, at which oral and written comments are accepted. And then after the public hearing, written comments are to be accepted for 60 days. And then on the other side of the other branch, we have March 3rd is the deadline to submit the IPP. And then along with that, all data has to be entered into our database that we call DB27. and any data checks have to be fixed by then. And that's also the deadline for, 60 days after submitting, planning groups have to notify the board as well as affected other planning groups of any potential interregional conflicts. Once the IPP is submitted to the Water Board, we have 120 days to provide our formal written comments back to the group. Then down at the bottom, those branches meet up again, and the planning group considers and addresses all comments. Then they adopt the final regional water plan, and the deadline to submit that final regional water plan to the board is October 20th of this year. So just kind of a general overview of where planning groups go after they adopt the IPP. And then, I don't have a slide on this, but in the meeting materials, there's an email we sent I wanted to touch on in case anyone is wondering where that came from. But at the scope of work committee meeting, there was discussion on kind of the interplay of infeasibility analysis and unmet needs and what strategies should or shouldn't be in the plan. And so we just wanted to provide the board's opinion and guidance on how that process can play out. There's discussion on potentially removing strategies from any entity that hasn't been responsive to outreach. And so there'll probably be more discussion today, and I'm happy to answer any questions on that. But essentially the board's view is that, you know, planning is for entities that can't plan for themselves or don't have the capacity, the staffing, the resources to do so. And so essentially removing any strategy from an entity that hasn't been responsive to outreach or survey is not an appropriate way to handle that. like I said, a lot of these rural and smaller public water utilities don't necessarily have the resources to do that. And so that really is the goal of outreach. That being said, though, we do recognize that, some of these strategies might not be feasible in the near term. And so you'll see that last bullet point. It is acceptable to leave some unmet needs in the near term for these entities that potentially might not be pursuing any strategy at the moment. That being said, though, removing all strategies for all planning decades all the way up through 2080 would not be appropriate. And so at the end of the day, the planning group can do it whatever it wants to. Essentially, we'll just review it, and we might offer a comment on the IPP. So anyway, that's just kind of the background of why that email is in there and the context for that. So if it's also an agenda item, so I'm sure there'll be some discussion on it later, but just wanted to give a quick little overview on that. So that's all for me, unless anyone has any thoughts or questions.
Any questions for John? All right, thank you, John.
All right, yep, no worries.
Okay, if there's no objection, and I'm sure it won't be any objection. we're going to take up agenda item 9.1. Now, the discussion on presentation of managed aquifer recharge in the Rolling Plains Groundwater Conservation District by Lynn Smith. Lynn, why don't you go on up to the podium, please? And while he's going to the podium, I need to make a note for the minutes that Charles Beseda joined the meeting at 10:13 a.m. Hello, Charles. Okay, Lynn.
So I promised Wayne 5 minutes, but since we got moved up to the first of the presentation, I feel like maybe a couple hours is available now. So we'll see how that works out.
Point of order.
I am going to point out, I've included slides that I'm not going to discuss. Those slides are in your handouts for your reference. I'm going to intentionally skip some just for brevity. A little background on groundwater conservation districts. We're created by the legislature. We're funded by taxes or fees. Get down to the bottom. You see, we've got statutory authority to conduct recharge activities. That was kind of the main point of this slide. We accomplish that through programs. These are some of the programs that Rolling Plains GCD has specific to us. A lot of other GCDs across the state share these same programs or, you know, pieces and parts of them, of course. A little bit about the Seymour Aquifer. It's sand and gravel aquifer, lots of clay in it. It varies from 30 to 90 feet thick. It is a water table aquifer. It occurs in individual pods in about 20 counties. What happens in one pod doesn't impact the other pod at all. A little bit unusual, but that's the way the Seymour was put together. The rate of decline is increasing, primarily due to agricultural use. Statewide, we've seen studies that show that it is favorable, has favorable characteristics for managed aquifer recharge. There's some of those declining aquifer levels. See, that rate has increased over the last 5 years, which is indicated by that red line. So a definition of managed aquifer recharge, we'll see it abbreviated MAR. It's the intentional, directed, and managed recharge of an aquifer by modifying the topography, soils, or through any other non-natural means. And that kind of differentiates it from just recharge, which is a natural process that doesn't need any type of input from man. I'm going to skip the Bufkin site. I do include it because it's our most developed site, but it is in Region B. The Meyer site's in Region G. This 17-acre site with an option to add probably 20 or 30 more acres to it. We've got a contract for purchase signed last week on that site. We're planning on doing subsurface testing this spring. Limited data that's available, it's a favorable site for us. That's what that site looks like currently. The Bettis site, actually is multiple sites on the Bettis property. They own quite a bit of property in Haskell County. We don't have a signed contract there yet, but we do have some surface data. Again, the data looks positive with the exception of water levels. Water levels, for whatever reason, are quite high right there around the Bettis property, so that's going to limit development there, we're afraid. But we'll see. We'll see how that works out. There's some of our interns from this summer collecting data. There's some of that data. That's actually a neighboring GCD that came over and helped us do some work. We appreciate that. I click through. Okay, here is what we anticipate with Bettis site, maybe Meyer site. This is a cross-section through managed aquifer recharge system, one version of it. You see that there's settling basin, and then it gets down into an infiltration basin. I show that basin full of water, but really it's going to be full of large rock. We've got to do something to keep the hogs from rooting around in our part of the world, and that's what we're going to try. That and maybe some 12-gauge. We'll see how that works out. So we use the energy source for this whole system is gravity. And that, you know, the gravity is free for us. So that's what we're hoping will work out. I do have some other options for it, but this is our plan. The Carter site, it's a pretty large site. With the type of system we're thinking about here, we're probably not going to have to own that site. We do feel like the other sites we will, it's a purchase situation. It's going to be inexpensive to develop, and here's why. There's not really any excavation for the site. It's going to be handled with what's called gabion basket walls. Basically, we're going to slow water down across that site and get it to infiltrate on its own. That's inexpensive right there. It'll still be closely monitored. You know, we're going to monitor water quality, water levels, infiltration rates on all of these sites. We have not done any physical work at the Carter site or the Gilliland site. Our project timeline overall, you know, we feel like these sites are going to range anywhere from $100,000 to a little bit over $1 million per site. Right now, we've got a little bit under, not quite $3 million in the bank dedicated to this project. We've received an ag conservation grant from Water Development Board, and we are seeking funding from Bureau of Rec. We failed on the first attempt on that, but we were given some ideas about how to reapply for that under a different category, so we'll be seeking that. You know, the water primarily is going to be agricultural use, but there are some municipal well fields that would benefit. Obviously, this is a flood mitigation project. We've just got to get our counties in line with that to get on the flood planning side of it. And ultimately, if this group is favorable towards this, we're going to seek some SWIFT funding in 2027. Past timeline, that's in the past. Okay, in future timeline, you know, we've got that next site access agreement we're working on. We're going to restart site investigations. If you look on the slide from, you know, up in Region B, that's our first site. It's been flooded for 6 months. We haven't been able to do any site work there at all. On the upside, there's plenty of surface water available. You know, we'll be doing our engineering design this summer. In the fall, final permitting through our agency, probably TCEQ for several of the sites, and then moving forward with construction during the dry time. The dry time in our part of Texas is during the winter. We expect over the next 5 to 10 years to pick up an additional one or two sites each year. Once we get a couple of these things functional, it'll be a little bit easier to talk to the landowners about. Today, I just, you know, we're seeking your support. Having reviewed the draft IPP, I see that our project is in that, and I commend our consultants for the hard work that they did on that. It's a completely new project. It's not like the last wastewater treatment plant or the last lake that was put in. This is a new thing. And, yeah, I appreciate that. That's all I have put out to y'all as a group. You've got my contact info here. I'm going to be around after the meeting if anybody's got questions. I'll turn this back over to Wayne.
Any questions for Lynn?
Did I have 5 minutes?
You did fine. Okay. Thanks, Lynn. And it is, I think, in the IPP, so that's why we moved Agenda Item 9-1 up.